Good morning. You're listening to The Coffee Table. I'm your host, Renee Gross. It's election season, and come November, Alaskans will have the chance to elect one seat to the U.S. House of Representatives. I'm joined today by two candidates running in the Democratic primary who are vying to upseat Congressman Don Young. Elise Galvin, an independent from Anchorage. Welcome, Elise.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
And Dimitri Shane, a Democrat also from Anchorage, is joining us in the studio. Welcome, Dimitri.
Great to be here. I love Homer.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. KBBI also invited Congressman Don Young to the discussion, but he was unable to make it. If you want to join in the conversation today, if you have questions for either of these two candidates, please call 907-235-7721. Or you can email us at info@kbbi.org. So Dimitri and Elise, not everybody in Homer may know much about you or who you are and why you got into politics. So let's kind of start by having you each tell us a little bit about yourselves. Elise, let's start with you. Give us some of your background.
Sure. I'm a mom, and I'm a lifelong Alaskan. My family came up here serving in World War II. I am here running because I think I'm connected to what Alaskans need. I have raised my four kids here, and I'm very happy to be able to ensure that the next generation has what they need in order to be successful. And of course, that means solving a lot of issues here. Right now, a lot of Alaskans are not feeling safe or getting the health care they need. Alaskans, we have the highest unemployment in the nation. So there's a lot of things to work on, and I'm excited to do it. I am also I have been a small business owner. I've also managed a large hotel. I've done everything from waitressing to working hauling trash on construction sites. So I've kind of been around the block when it comes to work.
Thank you, Elise. And Dimitri, why don't you tell us some about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Dimitri Shane, and I guess my story starts when my mother and I immigrated to this country when I was 12 years old. We immigrated from Russia, and we came to Anchorage, and we immigrated to Fairview. And through some unfortunate turn of events, my mother and I, we lived at the Awake shelter, and my mother worked really hard. During the nighttime at Walmart, and during daytime she went and got her college degree. And this is where I learned my work ethic. I became an accountant and a CPA. I graduated from UAA, and I worked with Alaska Native tribal councils and village corporations. I met my wife Melissa also in high school. And we have six wonderful Inupiaq kids. We adopted four girls not too long ago. And I'm running because we have many challenges in the state of Alaska. And I'm running because I see election cycle after election cycle, politicians not having the courage to run on the issues that are important to Alaska. Single payer Medicare for all, just to finally solve our healthcare crisis in the state of Alaska. Climate change, I think, is an important issue, and so we need to be doing all we can to bring renewable energy to the state of Alaska and move our country towards 100% renewable energy. So these are the important issues to my generation, and this is why I'm running.
And Elise, let me go back to you. Is this your first time running for office?
Absolutely is, yes. I have never been in office before, except in high school. I was the school president, but no, my only interaction with politics has been over the last 5 years. I've been a big proponent and leader in Great Alaska Schools, where we're trying to ensure each and every child has access to a very quality public education. Just tired of seeing all of the really awful cuts and disrespect to public education. So I've spent the last 5 years in Juneau and in D.C. advocating and kind of holding the line on public education. So that's all I've, in terms of interfacing with politics, that's what I have.
And why are you starting with running for the U.S. Congress?
Are you asking me or
mm-hmm.
maybe?
Yeah.
Because that's where we need to have our leadership. Sorry, but we're really lacking in bold, courageous effective leadership. And I think they're out of touch. What's happening right now there, I mean, I can't even get in the door in order to make change. I think that folks are in the pocket of special interests. And I'm very concerned about that. I think that Don's had, now 45 years to fix things, including the culture of public education, but certainly everything to do with our unemployment situation. That is just squarely on the shoulders of no real clear vision of moving us into the 21st century.
And Dimitri, same questions for you. Is this your first time running for office?
Yeah, this is my first time running for office, and I think this is what people are looking for. Ordinary people like Elise and myself stepping up and trying to bring new ideas to our government, and just a different take, like Elise mentioned, that we have special interest groups who are paralyzing our government system. And it's important that ordinary people participate in our democracy, and and this is the time to participate when things are really bad and things are not going well in our country.
And why are you starting with running at the U.S. Congress level?
I would go back to the things that are important to Alaska, because we can only fix our healthcare system through a federal action. So for us to have single-payer Medicare for all, it would have to happen at the federal level, so that's why I'm starting there. And again, we cannot address climate change at the state level alone, so that is why I'm running for U.S. House of Representatives, so we can get the grants and funding to make sure that we move our nation and our state towards a renewable energy future.
So you both mentioned healthcare and addressing the high costs of healthcare, and you mentioned that Alaska's health insurance is one of the most expensive in the nation. I want to talk to both of you more in detail about what you would do to make healthcare more affordable. Dimitri, do you kind of want to expand on what you were saying?
Yeah, so I think we have had this healthcare model of insurance coverage for over half a century, and that model has clearly failed. And single-payer Medicare for all is what Democrats will be pushing for in the coming years, and this is what the goal is for our country, to provide healthcare that is guaranteed by the federal government, and for the federal government to make a commitment to the American people to fund healthcare. That's where tax dollars should be going, and that is the vision that my generation needs, and that is what we need to make state of Alaska financially sound, because 30% of our state budget here in Alaska is spent on healthcare. So without federal government stepping up to the plate and funding healthcare, state of Alaska has a very bad future. If the federal government does not make a commitment to funding healthcare, then we can't afford education in the state, we can't afford public safety, we're not going to be able to afford infrastructure, and that's the reality. That is why every Alaskan and every member of the congressional delegation needs to be supporting single-payer Medicare for all as a solution.
And Dimitri, how plausible do you think that is, getting single-payer health care?
I think it's very possible. That is the future. This is what Democrats are going to be pushing for. And folks like Warren Buffett, for example, say next time the Democrats are in control of House and Senate, we will have single-payer. So it is something that is on our horizon here.
Elise, what about you? What are your thoughts and plans for making healthcare more affordable?
Yeah, I don't care if you call it Medicare for All, improved Medicare for All, Medicaid for All, or something completely new. I just want to fix it. We've got skyrocketing healthcare costs, and you know we're the highest in the entire world in Alaska per capita. And the goal is so important and so fundamental to our state's prosperity and quality of life that I believe everything should be on the table. We can't, you know, honestly, we can't take away existing coverage and consumer protections. We've got to stick with that, especially for the elderly and those with pre-existing conditions. And really, frankly, this means that we must, you know, restore what we've got going. Don Young he's voted time and time again to make things worse, not better. And in our healthcare system, and we need to get a representative like myself, and as your congresswoman, I will be the one who will do what's best for Alaska, not best for pharmaceutical companies or any other company. Right now, corporate is taken over.
And can you say more about how you feel about the Affordable Care Act? What aspects of it that you would change, or what aspects of it that you would want to keep?
So there are some things going on. Right now, as you probably are aware, we're actually lessening our opportunities in the Affordable Care Act. It's been pieced apart by our current folks who are in office, not just on Young, but the things like the pre-existing conditions, we need to make sure we hold on to that firmly. It's so important to women and to children. The Children's Health Care Insurance Plan, or CHIP as we call it, that's been threatened now several times. People are getting their payments late. This is critical that we strengthen, not take apart what's in place. The individual mandate is another piece where we know that insurance rates went up when we took that away. We need to keep the pool large so that the cost is lower. Those are important. But also, it's just good to know that there are things that we can do right now. I appreciate the bigger long-term systemic fix, but we've got to get our hands really all the way wrapped around things like the prescription drug prices. They're outrageous. Those costs make it more difficult for people to afford health insurance and then desperately need it. Families are really, even in Alaska, they're having to decide between, buying medications and paying for rent. No one should have to make that choice.
Let's talk about some other issues in healthcare. Both of you on your websites talk about addressing the opioid epidemic. Congress is in the middle of advancing numerous bills related to the opioid crisis, including an Opioid Crisis Response Act, which is, focuses largely on public health measures. My question for you both, And Elise, let's start with you. Is what do you make of Congress's approach to addressing the opioid crisis?
Too little. Right now, we know that the treatment, for example, and the reentry work is not nearly enough as it needs to be. CDC gave us a price tag to say, look, if you want to fix this, and you need to give it this amount of money, and we're something like 1/30th of the amount that was recommended. People need help. I was in Kodiak where I visited a women's shelter. In fact, I've been doing this all over Alaska, Homer, Bethel. And when folks have the help, unfortunately, even if they say, look, I'm ready for help, they have to wait until there's a spot available. And oftentimes the spot is elsewhere. So for Kodiak, they travel all the way to Anchorage, away from their home. And we really need to help them stay in their community. We need to make sure that when they do get treatment, that they're offered an opportunity for real jobs with real wages so that they don't sink into that despair again. So there's this sort of a systemic fix that we need to be having our eye on. And frankly, right now, while I appreciate that at least they're using the bumper sticker, I care about the opioid epidemic, that's different than fully supporting it.
And can you say more about what your plans are for addressing the crisis, as you say, kind of more thoroughly?
Right. Well, more fiscal support. That's definitely needed. We've had some programs that HOPE is doing some work, more facilities in different locations that are allowing for our Alaskan people to stay within their community, like I mentioned. We're a big state, and when folks have to fly into Anchorage, that's really asking a lot. We need a champion in Alaska or in D.C. who's willing to say, look, here's our map. We're more than twice the size of Texas. We have different needs up here, and so we need to have a disproportionate amount of help, frankly. We only have one representative, and that representative needs to be a champion who gets it. The mental health issues up here, as you know, I'm sure, most Alaskans know, we have more needs. We have the data says that we are suffering profoundly more per capita than anyone else in the nation, and we need to address that as a crisis.
Dimitri, what about you? Tell us about your thoughts about Congress's approach to the opioid crisis.
So the opioid crisis needs funding, and that funding will only come when we make healthcare a national priority, because the opioid epidemic is a healthcare crisis. And, you know, folks say, you know, I support, you know, fixing the healthcare system, but the only way you can fix it is by actually identifying the concrete solution. So I support single-payer Medicare for all, which means that the federal government will be responsible 100% for funding the healthcare system. So when there is a crisis like the opioid epidemic, it will be the responsibility of the federal government to fund the system. Right now, we don't have a healthcare system. Like, that's the honest truth. My wife is a physician. We do not have a healthcare system. There's no button you can press to fix a problem. My wife, Melissa is a medical director at South Central Foundation. And right now, I can tell you that with conversations with her, we have drug addicts in the ER. And they're staying there, and there is no treatment facilities. There's nowhere to transfer the people who have a drug addiction. I also go to court because my children, the four children that I adopted, we have to go to court for a criminal matter that's like against their parent. You see drug addicts who are asking for help, but the state of Alaska has no money. We have no facilities. We have no ability to provide that treatment. So only when our healthcare system, only when we have single-payer Medicare for all, will the state of Alaska have money to actually fund facilities and address this crisis.
Are there solutions beyond funding that you want to propose?
Beyond funding? Again, the opioid epidemic is a crisis. Right. So anytime there is a crisis, the way that the federal government deals with it, it allocates resources and funding. So right now it has been declared a crisis, but no resources are flowing in. So we need to deal with this crisis like we deal with every other crisis, is by allocating resources to address it.
And I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk about climate change. Alaska is on the front lines of climate change, and according to a recent report, we're warming twice as fast as the global average. How would you address this issue in Congress? Dimitri, let's start with you.
So I'm the only candidate in this race thus far who said we need to move away from burning of fossil fuels and we need to move towards 100% renewable energy. And this is how we can deal with climate change. And not only is this a solution to mitigate the effects of climate change, it is actually a way to bring revenue into the state of Alaska. It is actually a way to bring home the bacon. This is how we can get money for the state of Alaska to build renewable energy projects like tidal wave projects, wind farms, and so forth. So it's very important that we speak clearly on this issue and we actually propose a solution to this grave danger that threatens the lives of this generation of Alaskans and next generation of Alaskans. Right, like right now here in Homer, you have a king season where we have hardly any kings. In Chitna, we have the dip netting run has been closed again. There's no dip netting in Chitna for in history, I guess. That's the first time in history that has happened. And this is because of ocean acidification. So we have to be able to say what the goal is to mitigate these problems. And the goal is for us to move away from burning fossil fuels and towards a 100% renewable future.
Elise, what about you?
Hi, thanks for that question. It's a really critical one, especially as he mentioned, as we are truly feeling the effects, not only in our fish take in Homer, but gosh, Kodiak was 70% below its take in cod, up and down the Kuskokwim right now. I was just in Bethel, and they are, really, truly, their fish camps look like ghost towns. It's horrific. But on my website, I've been very clear about this, that global energy use must move from fossil fuels to renewable and clean energy sources in a very intentional way. I've been very outspoken about that, and I've also been meeting with people up and down the coast to find out what steps are we going to take right now and what can we do long term. It's actually a national security concern, and I believe through the Department of Defense dollars we can do things right now that will really deeply change up how we're impacting our whole way of living. But right now what's going on is due to our dependence on foreign oil and because of the risks of our climate due to the rising CO2 levels, things are really serious. We're currently dependent on oil and gas consumption for our standard of living, and the transition to cleaner fuels, it will take decades, but in the meantime, we must manage the necessary production and consumption of fossil fuels to minimize the real negative effects on the environmental impact. And there are things that we can do. There are incentives that we can make out there that's really possible. I think that we need a leader and a champion who's willing to push that. In terms of energy, renewable energy development, we've got, UAF right now has the highest referred to university in the entire world on climate change because it's doing well, but we need more resources there. We've got to ensure that NOAA, for example, is getting what it needs to do, the important research to figure it out. Yes, we know it's the change of temperature, acidification, maybe stressed fish. Why is that? Could it be certain types of things that are happening within the too much traffic in that area? Could it be bycatch? There's all kinds of things we really need to be studying carefully because we're in a crisis right now. There's high-efficiency homes that are happening, too, that we need to be looking at in terms of our model as a way for us to change up the way we're living, and at the same time, it will grow jobs for us. I look forward to being that champion in Washington that's pushing this forward.
Can I just add one more thing? Like, UAF is a wonderful research university. It's a wonderful university. But the reality is UAF, when it came time for them to build an electric plant and a heating plant, they built one that uses coal. And this is because we have people in government who are connected to the oil industry who are killing renewable energy bills. So the reality is, unless we have a federal government that's funding renewable energy projects on the ground and creating a different reality, you will have things like a continuous burning of coal and continuous burning of fossil fuel. So I think it's very important that we have people who are not connected to the oil industry and who are not oil lobbyists in Washington, D.C., in the U.S. House of Representatives, who are pushing for renewable energy funding to our state.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. We're talking to two candidates for the U.S. House of Representatives. And if you want to join the conversation, you can call 907-235-7721 or email us at info@kbbi.org. Let's take a little music break, and we'll be back in a few minutes to chat more. Let's get back to our conversation. Let's talk about education. Alaska has some dismal education statistics, including has one of the lowest high school graduation rates, according to data released by the U.S. Department of Education. Elise, let's start with you. What are some changes that you'd like to make on a national level that could help education here?
Well, we need to start with just a whole completely different way of looking at education. It has to be systemic as a cradle-to-career system. So we need to be helping our very youngest develop the brains that will be, of course, with less stress so that they're ready to learn. The early learning piece in Alaska is dismal. And we know we have other states in the nation. Five of them, red states, are far more responsible about delivering early learning. And to me, when we know that we have the least readiness in the entire nation, so starting at kindergarten, kiddos are coming in not ready. at 2/3 are not ready. And yet we offer the least in the entire nation per capita of early learning opportunities. That has to stop day one, and I'll be a champion for that. I don't know why Don Young, given all of the research that's out there and has been there for more than 30 years, he's had 45 years in there to fix that. That's not been done. When our students aren't arriving ready and when they're arriving with brains that are stressed, unfortunately, we have a lot of catch-up to do. And so we need to ensure that that happens federally. There are other things we can do also. We can ensure that teachers are given the time that they need to do the teaching. And right now, there's a lot of extra federal requirements that are put upon them that, frankly, are taking away from their craft, and that's teaching. And we need to get back to the basics of that. Those are a couple of things. I could expand beyond that into vocational training and opportunities that are definitely missing that we can put in on the federal level. We need to ensure that we have apprenticeships so that our 70% of kids who are not going on to college have an opportunity to develop a real career with higher pay. That is really critical. So the K-12 situation, as I just mentioned, quality teachers are the key to success there. What is that going to take? It's going to take resources, training. It's going to take respecting them and letting them do their work and not have the governmental requirements get in their way. And then at the university level, for our kids who do go on to college, we have to bolster the universities. They've been cut by a fifth over the last few years. Kids now can't even afford to go. There are things that we can do on the federal level in terms of dollars and cents. Let's make it to where they can actually get there. We are a smart state. We're full of very smart students. It's not that. It's that we're not creating the opportunities. And there's a student debt crisis right now. We have got to address it.
And Dimitri, what about you? What changes on the national level do you think could help education here in Alaska?
So when we talk about education, it's very important to note that 90% of education is funded through the state or through the municipal government. So 90%. When 30% of our state government budget of state of Alaska is spent on healthcare, $2 billion is spent on healthcare. The only way for us to get more money, and the easiest way for us to get more money to our education system, is by passing single-payer Medicare for All. That will free up $2 billion for the state of Alaska to invest in education, because we know what it takes to have a great education system. We need to have teachers that are paid well. We need to have teachers that have healthcare benefits when they retire. We need to have a consistency in the classroom, and you only get that if the teachers are not quitting every single year or not getting laid off. And that's the crisis right now, that every year we have teachers that are being laid off because the state of Alaska doesn't have any money. You have teachers, when they retire, new teachers that are coming in, they don't have healthcare retirement benefits or any retirement benefits because the state of Alaska is out of money. So we know what it takes to have a great education system. For example, my wife Melissa was an NSEP student, which is Alaska Native Science and Engineering program. And that's a program that takes kids from high school and exposes them to college experiences, to science, building model bridges, and et cetera. Every kid in Alaska should have an opportunity to be in a program like that. But that only comes if your state has money to do it. And the best way for us to get money for our education system is to pass single-payer Medicare for All. That means $2 billion. That means more teachers, better pay for teachers, free college, you name it. $2 billion is a lot of money, and that's what we need to be doing.
I want to talk to you both about the ongoing debate on school safety. After the school shootings this year, there's been a lot of ideas about how schools should become safer. And, you know, as you know, they range from putting more security in schools and arming teachers to stricter gun control. So I wanted to ask you both where you stand on this. Dimitri, let's start with you.
Yeah. So I have six kids, five daughters. When I send my kids to school, it breaks my heart that my five-year-olds are spending part of the day training for an active shooter in the classroom. That is not a reality that I can accept as a parent. I don't think we should be in this place as a country. I watched a student on the news with this latest shooting talk about how she just expected this to happen in her school. She expected a mass shooting to happen in her school, and then it did. And that is not a reality that we should be accepting. And I frankly blame Dong Young and others like him who have been in Congress for a decade. I mean, decades, like almost half a century now. And in this half a century, our federal government has not produced a single study on how to deal with this. Dong Young likes to blame video games, but he has not allowed the CDC to study this issue. So at the very least, we need a study. We need to fund the CDC to study mass shootings, gun violence, so we have an educated way to approach this problem. It is like cancer that's spreading through our society, and CDC should deal with it like a cancer, study it, and propose solutions to this problem. And that is what I will advocate for in Congress. I will make sure that CDC is well-funded and to deal with this issue.
And we do have a caller on the line, but before we get to him, Elise, why don't you tell us about your approach to school safety?
Well, let me just add that I agree with the absolute fear and terror in our, not only the parents, but in the children's minds, particularly when we were near those incidents, but even thereafter. I have been watching this since Columbine. This has been just horrific that we have not done anything. It is irresponsible. It is unconscionable. And I also appreciate that, you know, we're one of those, we have already some common sense gun safety measures while protecting the Second Amendment rights for every Alaskan. We get that. Gun ownership is a basic freedom that, of course, I cherish and Alaskans do. It's ingrained in our way of life. And it's vital for survival for many of the subsistence-based Alaskans. But, of course, with the freedom comes responsible gun ownership. And like Dimitri said, there has not been a single study, and it is a public health crisis. We're dying at more than twice, actually, the rest of the United States. We're dying at 23 per 100,000 while they're dying at 100. I mean, geez, I mean, by 11 per 100,000 by firearms. We've got problems here, and we need to know what it is. We know that, you know, it's likely that more than half are due to mental illness, so they're suicide. So let's figure this out. Let's address it. Let's not sit on our hands and let special interests take over.
And let's go to a caller. We have Bob on line one. Bob, welcome to the show. Tell us your thoughts or your question.
Thanks so much, and I just want to thank Dimitri and Elise for being on. I really appreciate it. These are important conversations, and it's hard to get into the political ring these days. Anyway, I there's a lot of noise in our internet, and particularly in our social media and Facebook. And you know, I've seen some what I believe to be fake accounts hurling accusations and kind of building people up into a froth in this race. And then I take a step back and I see some of the work that I've been involved in trying to pass a statewide salmon initiative, the statewide Stand for Salmon in that initiative. And we're seeing millions and millions of dollars coming in from these large corporations distorting the message and trying to confuse Alaskans. So my question for both of you is, you know, social media is so important. It played a vital role in the election of the current president. How do we get a handle on this and take back our public airwaves, essentially?
Thanks so much for your question, Bob. Dimitri, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think it's. I think it comes down to personal responsibility because there is so much garbage on the internet and so many rumors get spread that this is why we need to fund education so folks are educated. They can dissect the truth. They can figure out what the truth is and not fall for rumors, not fall for cyber attacks. And it's just the age that we live in. I think the key is education in an educated public. I think that's what the only solution to this situation really is.
Alisa, what are your ideas to make sure that people are getting, you know, only accurate information from social media?
Boy, Bob, I agree. It's so frustrating. I've lived this where I've seen so much crazy happening online that has nothing to do with truth, and yet we've got a leader right now in D.C. who is, well, frankly, he's never sent a text message, and he's proud of it. He's proud he doesn't use a computer. We need to have somebody who gets it, that that's where people are getting their information. We need to appreciate that our education system needs to develop critical thinkers. That's really important for us. And at the same time, we need to have somebody like me who's very transparent about it all. I am one who will definitely share with everybody. If they want to know, you know, what's going on, I will tell them through Facebook Live even, because we know that's where they're getting their information. That's where I need to be. I will be there saying, look, this is the issue that we're looking at today. And these are the things that I'm considering. Here is the different data points that I'm looking at. Do you have anything to offer? So not just have it a one-way communication, but have it two-way and use the mechanisms that we have in ways that will help us, not hurt us. I think the way to do that is by tackling it, being on top of it, and being very, very transparent.
So we have about 10 minutes left in the show, and I definitely want to make sure we get to talk about jobs and economic growth. According to preliminary figures from the Alaska Department of Labor, Alaska is continuing to lose jobs as it enters the third year in the recession. What will you do to support jobs and economic growth in Alaska? Elise, I'm going to lob this one back to you.
Sure, thanks. Well, as we think about how we're going to diversify our economy, like I mentioned earlier, it's all about making sure that we are getting multiple revenues into our state. I appreciate that we've got jobs happening in education, in healthcare. Lots of people are working there, and we need to make sure that we've got the income coming into the state to pay for that, those services to continue. They're critical. And we've got lots of ways to really make it happen, from developing low-cost, locally generated energy to building a culture of innovation and technological advances right here in Alaska. We can build the large vessel ports. I've talked about that a lot. And so have other leaders, by the way, yet we haven't seen any movement. But they're important, and I think that not only are they important for our national security, but they give something to Alaskans. They'll give us that lower transportation costs for all of the goods coming in and out. People want it, and that's something that we just need to get all over. And then, of course, the energy piece is important. We need to invest in all infrastructure that would help us improve the ferries, the roads. So it's not just the ports. It's more than that. And then I guess I think it's important for us to think about the high tech. How can we, on the federal level, make a difference? Well, a lot of those discussions start with the larger companies and broadband and how we're going to fund it. It's very expensive, but what it does for our kids in terms of giving them opportunities for the future is critical. They can develop the skills that they need internationally, that they can market internationally, even if they're staying in their home in Kiana or Bethel or, you know, Kotzebue. Everywhere they are, they can still do these things and bring in enough to help fund their way of life that they choose. And I think that that's really where it's at.
Dimitri, what about you? How would you approach economic growth and job growth here?
So Alaska has historically relied heavily on federal revenue, grants and funding and so forth. And I know this because I used to be an accountant, a CPA. I traveled all over rural Alaska, and I worked with corporations and tribal governments. And you really see where the money is coming from. You see how development happens. That road gets built by from federal money. That clinic in the village gets built using federal money. That airport in the village gets built by federal money. And the workers that fly to those villages to do the work come from cities like Anchorage and Fairbanks. So federal government fuels a lot of our economy. Unfortunately, that is going away because of Trump tax cuts. Because of this $1 trillion that we gave out to multinational corporations, the federal government does not have the money to fund projects in Alaska. And you will see a sharp decline in coming years in federal revenue. So this is why I'm going to Washington, D.C., so we can repeal the Trump tax cuts, so we can get back to bringing home the bacon to the state of Alaska, the federal revenue that funds these projects. We need to get back to building roads, bridges, schools, clinics, airports, just like when Ted was around. That's what we need to get back to, bringing home the bacon. The trickle down is not working for Alaska, and it's not working for Alaskan kids. And secondly, single-payer Medicare for all means billions of dollars into the state economy. Single-payer Medicare for all is the next oil pipeline, or bigger. So this is what it's about. It's about speaking clearly, proposing solutions that bring bacon to Alaska. And I'm a businessman. I have a business. I deal with China. I deal with California. And I would like to come to Alaska, and I would like to start a business here. I would like to hire employees here. But I cannot, and I will not hire employees in the state of Alaska because it's $2,000 for health insurance per employee. It makes zero sense to hire employees in Alaska. And until we get single-payer Medicare for all, Alaska will be at an economic disadvantage. So single-payer Medicare for all is about bringing billions of dollars into our state economy. It's about leveling the playing field for Alaskans so business owners like myself can hire employees in the state, so young people like myself can start businesses in the state. Because we do not have a fair system with our healthcare system. $2,000 per employee is unaffordable, and employees will not stay without healthcare. So until we get single-payer Medicare for all, it will be very tough to create jobs here. And this is why I'm running, so we can finally solve this problem for Alaska.
So we've been talking a lot about the issues here, but let's also talk about the election. Congressman Don Young has been in office since the 1970s. Why is it that you think that you can unseat him? Dimitri, let's go back to you.
It's, again, Don has been around for as long as he has been for because he has this reputation of bringing home the bacon. But he is failing. Our state is failing financially, and our state is failing economically. We don't have jobs. We're in a recession. So whoever runs against Don Young, they have to run on an economic message. And I'm running on an economic message. I'm the only candidate in this race who is proposing to bring billions of dollars into the state of Alaska, into our state economy. Single-payer Medicare for all is billions of dollars into a state economy. Moving towards 100% renewable energy and actually funding those projects and fighting for that funding is billions of dollars into our state economy. So you have to run on an economic message. And you also have to have a connection to rural Alaska because you have to have traveled for years around rural Alaska. And you have to have a connection to Alaska Native people, which I do think I have a connection through my kids and my wife, and that's what it will take to beat Don Young.
Elise, why do you think you're the candidate that would unseat Don Young?
Well, I know I'm the candidate because people have spoken, but with their feet. They've come into my office. They've come into my RV town hall. They've driven from Wasilla to Willow to meet me, to tell me their story. I have more than 500 volunteers statewide all over the state because people know that I'm connected to the reality of what we're dealing with here in Alaska. They know I'm a problem solver. They know that I am willing to reach across the aisle and get things done. They know that I do not stand on one specific bumper sticker. I am here for all answers for Alaskans. I believe in Alaskans. We built this state and its economy, and we can renew it. I get that. Things are different now. I'm one who appreciates the 21st century. I believe in science. People are happy with the fact that I am one who is not going to say no to working with everyone. This is the year. This is the year, of course, for a woman. This is the year for somebody who's very plain-spoken. And people want change. People are comfortable sharing their story with me because they trust that I am ethical. I am one who's civil and will always be civil and working through problems. I am bold. I'm tenacious. They've seen my work with public education for the last 5 years, and they've seen me be one who's one who understands that it's important that to make change now, we have to work together. And I can't wait to do that.
So we have about just a couple minutes left. And before you all go, I want to ask you one more question. If you make it to D.C., you're going to be working with people that you disagree with or that values don't match your own. How will you make change with people from, you know, opposite sides of the political spectrum? Elise, you want to take that one? And I'll just kind of give you just about a minute here.
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, women find common ground. I find common ground. I think it's important. There's a lot of research around that. I joined a group called Alaska Women in Send, and because I thought I was going to help others run. And then throughout that time, I was learning about how important it is that women are more connected to the leadership that's going on because they can get things done. Look at what's happening in the Senate right now. They meet regularly. They meet monthly. On both sides, they pull together, and that's exactly what I plan to do. In fact, there's a group called the Problem Solvers on right now in the House. I can't wait to be a part of that. They pull in one from the left and one from the right, and they get things done. Frankly, Lisa's been a pretty good example of that here for us in Alaska and in the nation. She's done some things for to show that that's how you get things done. You work together. You find what you have in common, get that done first, and then you start digging for more. And that's exactly what I'll do.
And Dimitri, what about you? How will you work from people from, you know, opposite sides of the political spectrum?
Yeah, so I think it's good to work together and to build common ground, but we have to hold on to some of our values. For example, right now, our federal government is putting children into cages. They're separating children from their breastfeeding mothers. We have a Muslim ban. So there are certain things you can work together with, but there are certain times that you actually have to stand up and clearly speak the truth. And this is a time in American history, it's a very dark time. So we cannot be building common ground like with folks who are putting children into cages. So I would say that I can't solve problems. I'm a business person. I work in China. I work in Indiana. If I can problem solve and work with in communist China, I certainly hope I can work in Washington D.C. But right now we have a very dark time in our country, and we need someone to actually stand up for what's dear, and what's true in the United States. And we cannot go to a place where we give up on our American values.
Well, that's about all the time we have. I want to thank you both so much for participating in the coffee table conversation. Elise Galvin from Anchorage, running as an independent, and Dimitri Shane, a Democrat, also from Anchorage. Thanks so much to you both.
Thank you.
And you are listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer.